This is an ABC podcast.
Indeed, indeed, repentance oft before I swore. But was I sober when I swore? And then came spring, and rose in hand, my threadbare penitence a pieces tore.
It's 6 months after the unknown man's body was discovered on Somerton Beach in Adelaide, and police finally get their first major breakthrough.
A few months later, the police were searching the body again for any missing clues, and they found a tiny scrolled up piece of paper that they'd missed the first time around, and it said, Tamim should.
South Australian filmmaker Carolyn Billsborough, she's made a documentary on the Somerton man. The tiny scrap of paper was torn from the final page of a book of Persian verse, the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. For the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, I'm Fiona Ellis-Jones, and this is The Somerton Man. Police launched a wide public appeal in a bid to locate the book from which the verse was torn, like a puzzle piece or Cinderella's glass slipper. By now the case had post-war Adelaide enthralled. It's early 1949. World War II had ended, and while some rationing still existed, there was a growing sense of optimism in the air. But under all that optimism, a paranoia was growing too. Fears of Reds under the bed and a preoccupation with spies. A top secret rocket range was being built at Woomera in the far north of South Australia.
An accredited newsreel and newspaper men can't see what's going on below. The Empire's most secret defence project is safe from prying.
This was the Adelaide that was gripped by the Somerton man story, the tale of a smartly dressed man with his tags cut off, found dead on the beach. And somewhere out there was a copy of the Rubaiyat, missing its final page, or at least those two words, Tamim should. People were fascinated by the story, the suitcase in the locker, the rolled up scrap of paper, checking their bookshelves for that final page of poetry. The collection of verses was a popular book at the time, as a gift between young lovers.
A man came forward to say that he had found a copy of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, and it did have the last page torn out. So he handed it in to police. He said it had been thrown into the back seat of his car.
He told police he presumed his brother-in-law, who he shared the car with, owned the book. His brother-in-law presumed it was his, and so it had lain there on the back seat of the car for the 6 months since that last day of November the Somerton man was last seen alive. The man who came forward had been parked that last day of November near Somerton Beach, window down. It would have been easy enough for someone wanting to get rid of the book to throw it through that open window. Police forensically compared the Tamim should paper against the colour and texture of the paper in the book. They confirmed an exact match. And this particular copy of the Rubaiyat seemed to contain two major clues for detectives working on the case. The first was a nonsensical string of letters.
W-R-G-O-A-B-A-B-D-W-T-B-I-M-P.
The writing was five lines long, and the second was struck out with a line through the middle. This spy mystery just got a code to crack. Cipher specialists from the Australian military, Scotland Yard, even the FBI were called in to try and decrypt the code. Was it a cipher pad, a key to decode a message within the Rubaiyat itself, a skip code, or a coded poem? Speculation that the Somerton man was a Russian spy was at fever pitch, but the world's experts were stumped. Yet the strange sequence of letters was not the only clue found in this copy of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. There was also a five-digit phone number, and this proved far more valuable. It belonged to a young woman who lived nearby. Her name was Jessica Thompson. She was known to her friends as Jo or Jeston. Jo Thompson was born in 1921 and grew up in the then working-class suburb of Marrickville in Sydney's inner west. Jo was a nurse with a bohemian streak.
She could be very sociable and up one minute, and then she would turn into a bit of a hermit in the next moment. Seems that she was a bit of an anxious character as well, a very, very intriguing character.
Jo began her nursing training in 1942 at the Royal North Shore Hospital in Sydney. We know she moved to Melbourne, then Adelaide, but we're not sure of the exact dates. She moved around a lot. I've done the walk from where the body was found on Somerton Beach to Jo Thompson's house in Glenelg. It took just 4.5 minutes. We're talking a few hundred metres. When police came knocking on the door of Jo Thompson's home, the young nurse flatly denied ever knowing the Somerton man. But police weren't convinced. They asked her to come and view the plaster cast of the body in the hope that she might identify it. Taxidermist Paul Lawson made the plaster cast of the Somerton man's bust. He watched as police brought a number of people to see the body, watching for a flicker of recognition. It said that Jo Thompson took one look at the bust and nearly fainted. She seemed physically shaken. But no, she told officers, she'd never seen the man.
Afterwards, it was brought back here.
Here's Paul Lawson speaking to Stuart Littlemore on the ABC's Inside Story program 30 years later.
Look at the thing to see if they could recognise the original body from the bust cast.
Any of them stand out in your memory?
I would say just ordinary people, ordinary couples, ordinary man on the street, if such a person exists.
Did you get the feeling that any of them really did know him?
I don't know.
Well, that seems to suggest to me... You're a very cagey man, Miss Wilson. It seems to suggest to me that maybe somebody did know him.
I wouldn't know.
Did any of them think they knew him?
I don't know. By the way, you're on tender ground.
Well, explain why.
Chatterboys.
Well, don't worry about that.
No, I'm not going on with that part of it.
Why not? I mean, what you suggest to me is that there's somebody who obviously did know him.
No, I'm suggesting that the people that came eliminated features and then decided they didn't know him.
But not everyone.
That's possible. I don't know.
You must have been there on some occasion where somebody really believed they knew him.
It's quite possible they weren't sure in their own mind.
So in a sense, some of your customers were more satisfied than others?
Could be.
You're not going to tell me?
Nope.
When Jo Thompson told police she didn't recognise the bust, detectives changed tack. If she didn't know the man, how was she connected to this particular copy of the Rubaiyat? The copy with a missing page, a scrawled code, and her phone number written inside. Had she ever owned a copy of the Rubaiyat? She had, she told them. She was an avid reader of Omar Khayyam's poetry. In fact, while working as a nurse in Sydney during the Second World War, she'd given a copy of the book to an army lieutenant by the name of Alf Boxall. Alf Boxall. Jo had struck up a friendship with the lieutenant at the Clifton Gardens Hotel in Mossman on Sydney's Lower North Shore. Finally, police hoped they'd identified their man, so they started searching for him, but not really expecting to find him alive. It seemed clear to them now. There was an unknown man on a beach with a scrap of love poetry torn from a book that Jo Thompson had once given him. The man had to be Boxall, didn't he?
One of the policemen said to me, did you hear about a body being found on the beach in Adelaide? Quite candidly, I wasn't sure, because I wasn't particularly concerned about a body being found on the beach in Adelaide.
What were they getting at? Did they think that the body was you, or that you were somehow responsible for the body? What did you think?
Well, the first impression I received was that the gentleman from Adelaide were highly annoyed when, after answering a few questions, they realised that who I was, that I was obviously the person referred to by somebody in Adelaide. The fact that I was there and still alive completely upset their apple cart, and they were very displeased.
Alf Boxall still had his copy of the Rubaiyat, complete with the intact page bearing the phrase Tamam Shud and signed with Jo Thompson's nickname Jeston.
Number 70.
Well, this is the verse that's,
yes,
that's written here.
Yes.
When the war ended, Jo Thompson moved to Melbourne, and Alf Boxall claimed he hadn't heard from her since. He told police he had no idea who the dead man was, but detectives were sure there had to be a connection.
Mr. Boxall, you had been working, hadn't you, in an intelligence unit before you met this young woman. Did you talk to her about that at all?
No.
Was it not done to speak about those things?
Well, it was not done to speak about any army affair.
So she couldn't have known about your involvement with intelligence?
Well, unless someone else told her.
Because, you see what I'm getting at, there is a theory, isn't there, about this whole affair, that the man on the beach was a spy of some kind.
Quite a melodramatic thesis, isn't it?
Alf Boxall died in 1995. He never spoke of the case publicly again. I've spoken to his daughter at length while researching this series, and she says her dad was just being himself in that ABC interview. Wry, wary, and, yep, a little cagey. But the Boxall family is adamant that Alf was not involved in any high-level intelligence. Just a kilometre north of Clifton Gardens Hotel, where Alf Boxall met a young Joe Thompson, you'll find Middlehead. There, on the easternmost tip, lie a number of military installments and fortifications, now known as the Old Fort. They once formed part of Sydney Harbour's outer defences. It's part of Sydney Harbour National Park now, but when Joe was introducing Alf to Persian poetry in the 1940s, it was a hub of intelligence activity. And in June 1945, 3 years before the Somerton man was found, police discovered the decomposing body of another man on a rock ledge off a bush track on the foreshore of the harbour. The 34-year-old's name was George Marshall, and the ledge he was found on was at Ashton Park, the leafy foreshore next to Clifton Gardens. And on his chest was, you guessed it, an open copy of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. At the time, George Marshall's death was ruled a suicide by poisoning, but no link was ever made between Alf Boxall, George Marshall and the Somerton man. So here's what we have. Two men, dead on the beach in the mid-1940s, one in Sydney, the other in Adelaide, both their bodies linking them to this book of Persian poetry. Are we looking at an assassin's calling card? Star-crossed lovers, poems with missing endings. Scratch the surface of this case and it's hard not to imagine a world of espionage and subterfuge, just as the people of Adelaide did in 1949. Jo Thompson asked detectives to remove her name from the files. She told them it would be embarrassing and harmful to her reputation to be linked to the case. Having found Alf Boxall alive and well, the police had no choice but to comply. Jo died in 2007, and was never publicly identified during her lifetime as the nurse at the centre of the case. But she had a son, a little boy born about 18 months before the body was found on the beach, and there were striking resemblances between him and the Somerton man. I'm Fiona Ellis-Jones. Our executive producer is Helen Thomas. Editing and production by Sophie Townsend and Jess O'Callaghan. Sound design and mixing by Martin Peralta and Ryan Pemberton.